Well, good morning. Welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair, the Friday edition. Today is the 19th day of October, and the year is 2018. It's overcast. And windy. I hope you had an opportunity yesterday to take advantage of the beautiful weather and get things stored away for the winter. Get your storage vehicles all taken care of in regards to that stuff you put in your tank. I can't remember what it is. I wish I could drink it and get renewed myself. In studio right now, KYMN radio personality David Vesladol. And David, I asked you to join me this morning on the KYMN radio Wayne Eddy Affair because I want to know about what's going on in regards to hunting. And I do know a few things, and I'd like to ask you about them, and then you can just take over, all right?
Oh, Wayne, I love talking about hunting. When you gave me a call, wanted to know if I was busy, could I stop in, can we talk a little hunting? I said, no problem.
You know, one of the things I thought...
I usually end up boring my wife talking about hunting, so she thought it was good.
Well, I thought maybe you got out of the house and she was happy.
But yes.
But one of the things that I was thinking about, I grew up in the city, all right? And I had an uncle that was a hunter and other people, but not like it is in the rural areas. So do you think it's a distinct advantage to grow up on a farm and pacing through cornfields and going through the woods for the various types of hunting, pheasant or deer or whatever? Does it have to, I mean, I would imagine you must have started, what was your first rifle, for example?
Oh, well, of course, started out with a BB gun. You always get a BB gun.
Yeah, right? I did that.
Yeah, but then quickly went to a .22, and then after that, various different shotguns, starting out with a 20-gauge, and then a 16-gauge, and then a 12-gauge. But it's interesting when you talk about growing up on a farm. I grew up on a small farm, but very much in a hunting culture. My dad... loved to deer hunt, loved to pheasant hunt, loved to duck hunt. But it wasn't just my dad. It was all my neighbors, all my friends, my relatives. And again,
your brothers?
Both my brothers also. So it was really always a conversation at the dinner table. Oh, I can't wait till fall. Fall's coming around. But then you'd look for things like even in the summertime. Of course, we did a lot of fishing and stuff like that. But it was always fun to go out and plink with the .22. You know, have the cans out there because you had a lot of open spaces, and so you were always like Davy Crockett walking through the woods when you were hunting squirrels, as an example. You just as a kid, you just kind of played that off in your mind.
Now, did you eat the squirrels and rabbits?
Yes, yeah. I would.
What do they taste like? Don't say chicken.
Actually, it depends on how they were fixed. Most wild game is very good tasting if it's prepared correctly and you don't know what you're doing. I, myself, am not a very good cook. My mother is a very good cook and could take almost anything that we brought in.
And by the way, how is your mom?
She's doing well. You know, she's had a couple of falls and stuff, but... she's still getting out. She likes to, you know, her mind's still very sharp. And so she's not really driving anymore. So we take some turns, all the siblings taking her to different events and stuff. Because she still has her social circle.
Yeah.
And she's still pretty keen. If I want to know what's going on in the neighborhood or anything south of town, I ask my mom.
Okay.
And she finds, I get the answer.
So. All right. I just wanted to know.
Because, yeah. And she's listening right now.
Hi, Mom.
And she will correct me on anything I say incorrect.
All right.
She's my best critic.
English-wise or comments?
A little of both.
Okay. One of the things I've often wondered in regards to, let's say, ducks. Okay, the duck hunting season is
on right now.
Okay.
In fact, today wouldn't have been a too bad a day to go out. You got the nice little overcast and a little bit of a breeze. Migration hasn't started yet. Still open water and plenty of food up in Canada and northern Minnesota.
Okay, and then are we in a flyway?
Well, yes, we are. There's approximately, well, depending on who you talk to, 20 to 25 different flyways across the United States. We're in what they would refer to as the pothole region, pothole flyway, which is the flyway that has the most problems. A lot of your other flyways, the duck populations are doing pretty good, but the pothole region is having a lot of issues. It's also where most of the ducks are in the country, so it's extremely important on that.
Okay, question number, folks, I don't know anything about hunting and wildlife. I know a little bit because I'm alive, but I don't know about, for example, the most popular duck in the pothole way or whatever you just said is the mallard, right?
Well, primarily. That's the big one. In our area here, it's really mallards, wood ducks, and teal. And wood ducks, this is a great area for wood ducks because we have the oak trees and the nesting form. You move to other regions of the country, it's quite different. For example, I'll go out to later on in November, I'll head out to western Montana to do some duck hunting out there. And widgeons are the big ones out there.
Okay, now one of the things that I know is that a mallard, which is a very beautiful duck, the male is particularly pretty with fluorescent or whatever you say,
well,
green. And
yeah, the greenheads. The greenheads are the drakes, the Susies are the hens.
Okay. Now, when they eat, they generally go into a lake or a pond, and they are able to go down and eat the vegetation.
Yeah, mallards would be considered dabbling ducks.
Okay.
And you'll see those in closer to shore, and you'll see their butts sometimes up in the
right.
air, and they're just dabbling, grabbing both, not only vegetation, but also, you know, some of the insects and stuff like that.
Okay.
One thing that they certainly love is shrimp, freshwater shrimp.
Oh.
And that's a problem around here. You go just to the western part of the state in South Dakota, those lakes are full of that freshwater shrimp. And ducks love those, especially mallards.
I didn't even know there were freshwater shrimp.
Oh, they're real, real small walleye. You go to some of them small lakes in South Dakota there that are full of those little shrimp, you get some beautiful walleye. But they also hold ducks. And that's part of our problem right around here, especially with migration coming through. This isn't a great place for them to stop because we don't have... Our water has gotten cleaner, but you still go out to our lakes. They're green there. And they don't have that freshwater shrimp. They don't have the vegetation. They don't necessarily have the wild celery growing. And that's what you need to hold ducks when they're flying through, and also hold ducks when they're nesting.
So, well, are they better tasting because they're more of a vegetarian type of duck?
Yes, yeah. Any duck, my opinion, the ones that primarily eat vegetation are better than the ones that eat fish. My favorite ducks are wood ducks and teal, and buffleheads, but wood ducks and teal, they have that nice little fat layer on them, and so the meat isn't so dry on that. Wood ducks, you know, this time of year, they eat a lot of acorns. That's their primary food source. So that's why this isn't a bad area for wood ducks.
Off the ground?
Yes. Yep.
What, do they fly in and walk over to the tree? And
yep. Well, yep, right off the ground. In fact, well, wood ducks nest in a tree. You know, they're a cavity nesting duck. You will have, it's surprising how high in the air they will nest, and those little ducks just jump out and just fall to the ground.
I've seen nature shows.
Oh, sure.
And they just plop down and get up and follow mother.
Now, one of the problems we have around here is that people like to cut down dead trees. We need dead trees so that woodpeckers, like pileated woodpeckers and stuff, can create the big hole. Wood ducks use those for nesting. Now, you'll see wood duck houses out there on trees. Ducks Unlimited does a wonderful job of trying to get wood duck houses out there.
And so how do pileated woodpeckers taste?
Very similar to eagle.
I have a tree in my yard, a lot fewer after a couple of weeks.
Yeah, you and me both.
The woodpeckers just, it's like an elevator. They just had a hole, And I look at that and I wonder if that's going to be a weak spot or anything, but I haven't found any ducks inside there. But as we're talking now, you mentioned that the mallard, you can see its butt in the air as it's feeding off the bottom.
Yeah. And they're not the only one that does that, but that's a dabbling duck.
Aren't they really good at taking off the water? I mean, don't they just almost go vertical and fast?
Most of your ducks will. They're an interesting species. They can be a difficult duck. They can be a difficult game to hunt. Typically can't sneak up on a duck because they can see roughly 320 degrees with their eyes set back. So their eyesight is very good. They have good hearing stuff. And they rely on one another to also alert you. So that's why most duck hunters use decoys to bring them in. And that's an art in itself. You talk to any duck hunter, they'll tell you they know how to put up a set of decoys.
Well, I've ran into people that were real proud of their decoys. And by the way, I heard that a mallard some ducks can get up to 50 miles an hour.
Oh, yes. Yep, absolutely.
That's amazing.
Yep. And so one of the biggest problems, I think, biggest mistake duck hunters make, they do all this preparation with getting real good at calling, at being an expert at putting out decoys, all the camouflage, finding a location. They're not good shots. People need, just like anything, you need to practice. You need to get out there and shoot. Go to the shooting range. And practice on, clay pigeons going straight away from you, coming in at different angles, coming at you. I've hunted with a lot of people, and we've done everything right, except they don't hit the duck.
Well, I always was under the impression that you freeze your butt off, you're real happy when it's overcast, and sometimes even snowing or raining.
Absolutely.
And I'm going, wow, that's really stupid. But anyhow, I always had the impression that a whole bunch of ducks come in, and you got a 12-gauge shotgun, and all you do is pull the trigger because all these little BBs spread out, and with all those ducks flying over, you're going to get one.
Well, no, not
exactly. Sounds easy.
Yeah, it sounds easy, but that's not the way it works. It's wonderful when you have a flock of ducks come in to you and get within in range, but what happens a lot of times, you have singles or doubles, just a pair coming in. A lot of people shoot too soon when they're out of range. They kind of what we refer to as sky blasting, and that gets frustrating because if there's other hunters out there and everybody's working them, trying to get them to come into there, and they're circling, and then you somebody shoot who is completely out of range.
So what happens when they're in range and you're on one side of the pond and somebody else is on the other side of the pond and you both shoot at the same time? Is it the best dog that wins?
Sometimes. Ideally, in those situations, you never set up close enough where you could be shooting on top of each other. There's usually always enough room out there where you can be at a further away enough distance. So, one, you don't have BBs hitting the person across from you, but also that it's very clear as to who actually gets the duck. But you do bring up a point about dogs. Duck hunting with a dog is so enjoyable, and duck hunting without a dog, I just generally won't even go out. There's something about having a dog, a well-trained dog that knows what he's doing. For example, and I'm going to brag a little bit about
educational, so it's not bragging.
About my dog, I have a chocolate labs, and so he's kind of an all-around dog. I use him both for waterfowl hunting and upland game hunting. But
game hunting?
Pheasant hunting, grouse hunting.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was thinking game. Deer, and I'm going,
well, No. Okay. I'm sorry. But when we're out in the duck blind or we're just sitting out there, he's all business. He's actually another set of eyes for me. I can be sitting there talking with, we'll use Hayes Scriven as an example. Him and I go duck hunting together. We can be sitting there, you know, just chatting away. But you look over at my dog, he is sitting there along the shore constantly scanning the sky. He knows the difference between ducks and blackbirds and stuff. And a lot of times he will notice the ducks coming before I do. And so it is. It's like having another set of eyes. And then, of course, he's a retriever. So you drop a duck out there, and you send him out, and he brings it on back. And it's nice.
Are they happy to do that?
Oh, he absolutely lives for that. That is his life. When I, in the fall, like the night before I'm going duck hunting, I'll start to pack up some of my stuff in my truck. He will actually either sleep under the truck, in front of the truck, or if I have the tailgate down, jump up. So there's absolutely no way I can leave without him. It is absolutely his.
So can you train a dog to tell the difference between a duck and a blackbird?
How does
that?
That's just part of it's in them, but you just it works with them with their experience. For example, even my dog, I'll take him out pheasant hunting, and he hunts pheasants like crazy. He'll totally ignore a turkey. He just does.
Do you take him turkey hunting?
No. You don't really use a dog for turkey hunting. Okay. There, that's more of a ambush hunt where I like to sit inside a blind and call them in to me and have them come within range.
Are they good?
Yes. Absolutely.
Really?
Yep. I take
after eating all those rocks or pebbles or whatever they are.
Well, most any bird that eats any type of a grain has to have grit in their gullet to grind up the seeds. So whether it's a pheasant or a turkey or a dove, they need that. And most of your turkeys around here are eating soybeans, corn, and acorns. Of course, in the spring and summer, they're eating a lot of, you know, things like caterpillars, bugs, and stuff, worms, stuff like that. But, yeah, the wild turkey is very good. I always have mine smoked. I take it over to Denison Meats, and they do a wonderful job smoking it for me. In fact, I just made this week smoked turkey and wild rice soup, and that was... That's a great way.
But you just said you weren't a very good cook.
Well, I'm not, but that's something I've practiced at. Okay. It can do a little bit.
I heard that turkey hunting is difficult, and to me, I see them on the road, and, you know, please stay out of my way.
I absolutely know what you mean. Yeah. People say, well, that's got to be the easiest thing in the world. It is until you actually go out there and try to hunt them. Of course, you can only shoot a jake or a tom. You can't shoot a hen. A jake is a less than one-year-old tom. It's just the ones with the beard.
Kind of like a stallion or something?
Yeah.
In the horse world?
Yeah. Turkeys have unbelievable eyesight, great hearing, and they're smart. They're not the easiest bird to hunt, but it's also one of the most enjoyable things. I love sitting out there in the springtime, watching all the wildlife go by, and then calling turkeys in. And it's almost like when you start calling, it's almost like they're hunting you because they're looking for that hen. And it's an interesting hunt.
Have you ever been attacked by a turkey?
Nope, I haven't. And
people have, haven't
oh,
they?
Yeah, but that usually happens in towns and cities where they don't really have any predators and they've gotten so used used to people, they start to become territorial. Now, what I have seen is when a couple years ago, I shot a turkey, and it was down on the ground, still fluttering a little bit. The other two toms that were with him attacked him. They jumped up on top of him and just nearly pecked his head off because they sensed a weakness. And in the springtime, you know, the males are they want to do the breeding. Oh, this one, something happened to this one. We're going to get rid of him.
All right. We're going to take a break, and we will be back in just a moment. Dave Estledal is my guest if you want to know more about Dave and KYMN Radio.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Andy, reminding you to tune in this Saturday at 11 a.m. to Northfield Outdoors on 1080 a.m., 95.1 FM, or streaming online at kymnradio.net.
Hey, we're going to be talking the 2018 Minnesota Governor's Pheasant Hunting Opener that took place in Laverne. We're going to be talking all things habitat, hunting, and the outdoors. And make sure to listen in as we will have some special guests.
At Kenyon Holden Warsaw Mutual, you can get the coverage you need from the people you know. And they will be there when you need them most, because Kenyon Holden Warsaw Mutual grows trust locally. This week, Kenyon Holden Warsaw Mutual and Grinnell Mutual would like to congratulate all of the area FFA students attending the National FFA Convention. Trust in tomorrow. Contact Kenyon Holden Warsaw Mutual, your local Grinnell Mutual provider in Wanamingo today. Trust in tomorrow is a registered trademark of the Grinnell Mutual Reinsurance Company.
School bus transportation plays a critical role in the education of our students and is a direct link between home and school. More than 25 million children ride school buses to school each and every day. As we begin a new school year, here are a few tips to keeping our children safe. When the yellow lights are flashing, motorists should slow down and prepare to stop. It indicates the bus is preparing to stop to load or unload students. Red flashing lights and the extended stop arm indicate students are either entering or exiting the school bus. Motorists should stop at least 20 feet from a stopped school bus displaying red flashing lights. This has been a bus safety reminder brought to you by Benjamin Bus in Northfield, wishing all local area students a happy and safe school year.
We're back live and in color on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio, 95.1 FM, the 1 and 1080 AM. And I'm scattering right now. I'm kind of like a shotgun. By the way, I think the last time you and I had the privilege of conversing on my show, I told you that I got a 410 shotgun from my mother because she didn't know what I needed when I was in my late 30s, early 40s. And
that's a nice little gun. That's something I would start my kids out with. But yeah. But I have a couple of 410s. They're fun to shoot. They're very small. You have to be very good to hit any targets and stuff with that.
I used them on red squirrels.
Yes, that's a good way. A good thing to use them for.
It's a 1024 on 1080 radio. Dave Estledal, my guest on Kim. And one of the things that I've wanted to know is I don't understand, and I'm laying in bed, for example, watching TV, toward dusk or something, lying on the bed, and I can hear the wildlife, like particularly what I call geese, and I'm wondering, we have so many around here, and don't they go somewhere when it gets cold, and are they good to eat? Can you hunt them? I mean, it's beautiful to see the V's, and I understand why they fly in that formation.
Sure.
Because of the wind resistance for the backpack, and they exchange the lead, et cetera. But, you know, you look and you say, well, there's hunters. Why are there so many around, and what do you do with geese?
Well, first, actually, Canadian geese is a pretty good success story, because I don't know if you remember as a kid, it was so rare to see a Canadian goose. It was almost more common to see an eagle than a Canadian goose. In fact,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, in fact, the larger geese, the larger Canadian goose, was they were afraid it was actually going to go extinct. And so through organizations like Ducks Unlimited, and then, of course, with the federal government, state government, they were able to really bring back the geese. Now they're all over. They're almost a nuisance.
Well, in Rochester, they have.
Yeah, and geese will stick around any place as long as they can find food. and some open water.
Well, where did they find food when there's 3 feet of snow on the ground?
It's amazing. There's a lot of stubble out in fields that they can go and pick through and stuff. And geese are the type of a bird that eats most anything. You know, they'll eat insects, they'll eat worms, they'll eat grubs, but they'll also eat grass. Farmers hate them when their beans are just starting to come up and they're just walking down the row and plucking their beans up and stuff. So they are an animal of opportunity. I personally will hunt geese, but geese is not my favorite waterfowl to eat. I find them a little dry. I've tried lots of different ways, but again, I'm not the best cook.
I always thought geese were oily.
Farm raised.
Okay.
Wild ones, they don't have all of that fat on them. Snow geese, the white geese, have actually become a little bit of a problem, and they are almost overpopulated. That's why the laws are different on snow geese than other waterfowl.
How do you tell the difference?
The snow geese are white with the black tips. They're about the size or just a hair smaller than the Canadian goose. So the snow geese and the Ross geese, they're very similar. They'll fly together. A swan will be, you know, a lot bigger. So you can tell the difference between that than the snow geese. But they have a spring hunt all across the U.S. Where you can... The laws are very different. All waterfowl hunting, you're only allowed 3 shells in your gun, and you have to have a plug in there. You don't for snow geese in the spring. So you can take as many as you want, because they've been pretty hard on the habitat up in Canada.
What do you think is going on? And we see it all the time, whether you live downtown Northfield or out south where you live. You know that... I'm thinking as I hear them before I see them, and I'm thinking, you know, they're just coming back from a feed, and they're coming back to nest. What are they, the squawking that's going on, do people know what that's all about?
Yeah, they're talking to one another. They do communicate. A Canadian goose will mate for life.
Oh.
And so, and a Canadian goose will live to be 20 to 25 years old.
Wow.
If not shot or a predator takes them. And so, typically you'll have the mates talking to each other, keeping a communication with each other. Or in the springtime, you will have, or I should say late spring, summer, when they have their young, they're communicating back and forth together.
Oh.
And so they really are talking to each other, finding each other.
Okay.
And then, of course, you'll have some geese that don't have a mate, and they're trying to steal a mate, and so there's a lot of squawking there in early spring.
Tell me about their flying formation. You probably know more about it than I just said. Tell me about that.
Well, most of your waterfowl, you will see them flying in like a typical V. And it's pretty common that your strongest flyer is in front or will stay in front until it weakens a little bit and someone else. Because everyone following behind it, it's easier flying. It's like drafting, like in NASCAR.
Yeah.
Exactly. So those geese that are behind or those ducks that are behind, they're drafting. So it's not as hard flying. So they're pretty smart on that. And so, again, your geese around here, yeah, they're moving between fields and lakes and different stuff. A lot of them will migrate south, but if there's food and there's kind of open water, like, for example, around Rochester and stuff, they'll stay here all winter. And you'll have some ducks that will do that also.
I always wonder where they're coming from and where they're going. And, of course, sometimes Ames Park is inundated with them.
Yeah.
And sometimes, well, like now, I haven't seen them around.
There's too much food out in the fields. They're combining.
Okay. Will they be coming in and November and
if there's roosting. If there's some open water and they can find some food someplace, they'll be sticking around here.
Have you seen that big pond that was created on 246 at County Road 22?
Yep, I know exactly which one you're talking about there.
I've seen ducks or, you know, things that fly in there.
Yep. And this time of year, there's probably no hunting allowed there, so they figured out it's kind of a safe spot.
Okay.
And there's some open fields right around there.
We're going to take another break on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Dave Estledal is my guest this morning. We're talking hunting. They got a show tomorrow morning that I know that you're going to enjoy about pheasant. We'll talk briefly about that right after we come back.
Don't miss the Home Improvement and Design Expo this Saturday only at the Healthy Sports Center, featuring up to 150 home improvement companies, giveaways, and more. It's the Home Improvement and Design Expo this Saturday at the Healthy Sports Center. See it all at expoguys.com. That's expoguys.com.
Do you have an old junker car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junker vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
Hi, I'm Pam Fikencher, senior pastor at St. John's Lutheran Church in Northfield. We invite you to join us for beautiful, song-filled worship every Sunday at 8:30 and 10:45 a.m. We are located at 500 3rd Street West in Northfield. If you can't join us in person, you can listen to our broadcast at 8:30 a.m. every Sunday on KYMN Radio 1080 a.m. or live online at kymnradio.net. Go to stjohnsnorthfield.org to see our full calendar of events. We hope to see you soon.
We will. On KYMN Radio, we have Mr. Dave Estledal. He is an expert hunter.
Oh, I don't know, go that far.
I would say all your life you've been hunting. And
yes.
Everything
yes.
that you've been hunting and all that. And one of the things that I remember when KYMN Radio started 50 years ago, we were out in Waterford Township, and we have townies. Twin City people. We were connected with a lawyer and some businessman, and they'd come down and pheasant hunt on our 10 acres down there.
Sure.
And I went with them one time with a 410 and tried to follow a pheasant and shot, and I realized I was shooting towards a house. Well, I knew that those pellets wouldn't get there with a rifle, it would have.
Right.
But you don't hunt pheasants with a rifle.
No, you don't.
But anyhow, I quickly said, you know what, this is not for me. And then, as years went by, there were no pheasants. I mean, we used to hit them on the way out to the station. And, you know, you don't want to do that, but you would. There were so many. What's the deal on pheasant nowadays?
Yeah, I don't think we will ever get back to the glory days of pheasant hunting. We did. When I was a kid in the 70s and right early 80s, there were a lot of pheasants around, and there were some reasons why. The biggest thing is with CRP ground. Minnesota, at one time...
CRP.
Yeah, that's CRP ground. It's a set-aside ground.
Okay.
It's part of the farm bill.
Yep.
The origins of that was to help farmers get higher prices for corn and beans, and it was to set that aside. But it's kind of morphed into also habitat, because it's an important habitat for wildlife, pheasants and ducks in particular. Probably our last high of pheasant hunting was in 2005, but that was the start of losing CRP ground. Prior to that, Minnesota alone had a little over 2 million acres in CRP ground. That's a lot of habitat. Today, we're down around 800,000. Add into that the change of farming practices. Fields are bigger. Fence rows are gone, so you don't have all of that nice nesting along the fence rows and stuff. Tree claims have been taken down.
When you say tree claims, you're talking about a...
At the end of a field, there would be trees planted, yeah. You know, to block the wind, hold
yes,
the snow, that kind of stuff.
Right.
A lot of those are gone. And I cannot blame the farmers at all on this. This is their land. This is their property. This is their livelihood. But what I can blame a little bit is the farm bill not putting money in for CRP ground. Of course, that money's got to come from someplace. The other part of that is sometimes it's frustrating that the hook and gun group, you know, the hunters and fishermen, don't necessarily work the best with government groups, and don't necessarily the environmental groups don't work the best always. Everybody's got their own take of what CRP should be. And we've lost, I think, over 20 million acres nationwide in CRP ground. You can't take that habitat out without losing pheasants. Every state has seen their pheasant count.
Am I correct that South Dakota is a pheasant paradise?
It was. Okay. They've had, within the last 3 years, they've had close to a 40% decrease in the number of pheasants. Now, they still have more pheasants than we do in Minnesota, but that's been a big drop, and that's a serious concern.
Is a pheasant native to Minnesota, or is that where?
You know, that's an interesting thing you bring up, Wayne. A lot of people think that the ringneck pheasant is a native bird to the U.S. It is not.
No?
Nope. It was imported from China. Back in the late 1880s, I might be off a year or two, but roughly 1880s, the first pheasants were imported in the western states, out in Oregon and stuff, simply because people had been to China, loved the taste of pheasant, saw this as a game bird to hunt. And so there were a number of different attempts to get them started in the U.S., but it was really in the 1880s where there was a concerted effort, and they just took off because we had the prairies, which is perfect breeding ground for them. I think it was in 1909, 1910 when the first pheasants were brought into Minnesota, and it was the late 20s. All of a sudden, there was enough pheasants, you could start to have a season on them. And they just took off. We had perfect conditions for them here. And they didn't compete with other birds like your grouse or your prairie chicken. And people loved them. So as a
taste.
Yes, as a taste. And as a sport.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great sport.
Well, pheasant under glass.
Yes, there you go.
Are you familiar with that? The saying, pheasant under glass?
Yes. Yeah. Now, I can't actually say I've had that in a restaurant. I have had pheasant where I've held my glass over it. That's as close as I've come.
Well, the millennials, you know what I'm trying to say. They never have heard that.
Oh.
And there's this old joke that I just love to tell.
I can't think of a better person to tell it.
Well, you know, there is this organization the government has, and I'm sure at 3M, they had to abide by that organization's rules on safety.
OSHA. Yes.
So anyhow, this one group of people were all employees. And so when they had their big banquet, they had pheasant under safety glass.
Ah. Boom, 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 boom.
Hey, by the way, I'm real disappointed in you. I walked
in there. I'll take a number.
I specifically got this hat.
Your Ducks Unlimited.
And you never said anything.
I just assume you should be wearing that.
Okay. I bought that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Don't they raffle things off?
I think I belong. I'm a member of all of these organizations. I'm a member of Ducks Unlimited. In fact, I think I've got 3 memberships just here alone because it's an organization I like. I feel strongly about donating to. I'm a member of Pheasant Forever, Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, the National Wild Turkey Federation. All of those organizations do a tremendous job, not only in this state, but in this country. This state would look significantly different without those organizations as far as habitat and wildlife. They really would, especially with the drop in CRP ground. If you're a non-hunter, you like to birdwatch, perhaps you like clean water, these organizations have done a lot to to get land or working with farmers to have some set aside land for habitat.
Many years ago, I think it was the JC organization would have been able to get, I think it was like pine tree seedlings, and they were given to them if they could find a place to plant them.
Sure.
And we had 10 acres out at the radio station, and my boss and then my partner, Stan Steinecke, who was a great hunter, wouldn't allow it. And I said, well, why can't you let them come out and plant all these trees because it's good for habitat?
Right.
And he said, because it would interfere with our radio tower signal.
Sure.
And to this day, I don't know if that's true, but I'm sure it must be because he's a hunter. Speaking about hunting, I want to take another break and come back and ask you about what's going on in Goodhue County in reference to a tick and a deer.
Hello, this is Josh Gare. My wife and I received bad news in 2006 when I was diagnosed with cancer. In addition to my growing health concerns, medical bills were piling up. I beat cancer, but I learned the struggles families face with the skyrocketing cost of health care. I'm running to be your state representative to be a voice at the Capitol who will fight for affordable health care. I will work across the aisle to lower costs and ensure you are able to keep your doctor. November 6th, vote for me, Josh Gare, to be your next state representative.
Paid for by Friends of Josh Gare.
I'm Britt Ackerman, and I'm honored to serve as the president of the Economic Development Authority. I love Northfield and its citizens. The Cannon River Civic Center will generate substantial revenues for our city and its businesses. The Civic Center will generate over $1.3 million in tourist revenues from tournaments alone. This doesn't even account for other revenue-generating activities like concerts, trade shows, conventions, and community events. I travel throughout the state for my work. Everywhere I go, people I talk to are familiar with what Northfield has to offer, yet they don't make the effort to visit. The Civic Center will draw visitors from outside the community who will spend their dollars on restaurants, hotel rooms, and retail purchases downtown. And the Civic Center will create more than just economic benefits. Civic centers build communities, a place for people to gather for entertainment, sports, arts, education, and togetherness. For more information, please visit ci.northfield.mn.us.
This informational message has been provided by the City of Northfield.
All right, we're back on KYMN Radio. My guest this morning is Huntsman David Vesladol. And I have heard, read, or know about a tick that is affecting deer, and right in Goodhue County, right next to us. What's your knowledge about that?
Well, all of Minnesota and Wisconsin, well, large parts of the country, are concerned about deer ticks and the spread of Lyme disease.
Oh.
So you need to be...
Amongst the herds or amongst people?
Amongst people.
Oh.
The way Lyme disease works, it starts out with a mouse, and you have ticks that get the Lyme disease from that, and these ticks love deer. Deer spread them around and stuff. And then the tick picks up the Lyme disease and then gets on a human, on a person. And typically, a deer tick is so small, it's hard to steer. It's about the size of a pinhead. Not much bigger than that. But if you get it, you'll end up with it'll look like a circle, like a bullseye. You ever see anything like that, you need to get into the doctor. Because Lyme disease can affect people in so many different ways.
Well, do you remember Donuts, the radio guy from the cities, and used to ride with him in a raid reenactment? He didn't know what was wrong with him.
Yep.
And finally, it ultimately turned out to be Lyme disease.
Yep.
And he lost all of his energy.
Oh, yes.
And in the job he had to have energy.
I had a neighbor who lost sight in one of his eyes, and it finally came back. It was Lyme disease.
They can treat it once they know?
Once you figure out what it is, and the earlier the better.
And, you know, I always wonder, well, why don't they test people right away for that kind of stuff, you know?
I think it's more prevalent now in people testing that and stuff. I certainly, you know, when I bring my dog in, that's one of the first things they always look for on that. And that's why I always make sure that he's up on his front line to keep fleas and ticks off of him. I've often thought, well, why can't I just put that on me? But probably not real good for humans.
What is it?
It's just a
collar? Or?
No. Well, you can get a collar like that, but typically what I use, it's just a little packet with it looks like a green liquid inside it, and you just put them on it, on their neck, on their skin, and it keeps fleas and ticks away for usually 6 weeks. And
just on the neck area?
Yeah. But the whole body.
Oh, you do?
You put it on there, but it takes care of the whole body.
Oh.
And there's also some that they can take as a pill, but it works really well. And if you've got a hunting dog or dog that's outside, that is so important to do.
Okay. And of course, yours is a short hair, so.
Well, it's a lab. It's got that oily hair.
I love labs.
Yeah, and I'm so partial to labs because they're an all-around good dog, and especially for waterfowl hunting. Golden retrievers and labs would be my favorite two dogs for duck hunting. The lab I like because it has a little bit shorter hair, and so they don't get quite so muddy, and they can get rid of the mud.
Oh, aren't there golden Labradors?
Well, there's...
Yellow or...
Yeah, that's typically just a color. The golden retrievers have the longer hair.
Well, we have the shorter-haired one in our neighborhood. Everybody knows this dog. Yeah. And so lovable.
Oh, absolutely.
And so smart and so obedient. And guess what? He's getting old.
Yeah.
And you know, come walking up and, you know, you can just tell that it's an effort. And your heart goes out because you've known the dog since it's a puppy.
Yep.
In a playful time. And then the intelligent, I know what I'm doing time. And then you see him kind of walking slow.
Yeah, my dog is...
Well, you know that when you get one and train one, that it's going to die in your lifetime.
Yeah, this is my third hunting dog, third lab. And my current dog, his name is Oli. He's 12 years old.
Wow, that's pretty good.
And he's slowing down. He still has the heart and still wants to go, but I got to be a little careful with him, especially on the hot days, pheasant hunting, that we don't overdo it.
Now, when you lost your other two dogs, is that do you bury them or do you cry?
Yeah.
You're getting choked up right now.
Well, it's hard. They become such a part of your life. And every one of them was different. My yellow lab... She was an interesting dog. She was a great hunter, but she was just kind of a plodder, a little slow. And you could send her into some cattails where you dropped a duck. And if it took her 45 minutes to find that duck, it took her 40. She never gave up, came back. My second dog, Smokey, which was a chocolate lab, was more of an alpha dog. He didn't like to hunt with other dogs. In fact, if you were out hunting and dropped a pheasant, another dog he'd go and take that pheasant away from that other dog and bring to you. My current dog, Oli, he is a very passive, easygoing, wouldn't hurt a flea, but probably the smartest of all the dogs that I've had. And he's got something in him that it's like he can read my mind. What we're going to do stuff.
So. Is there this sounds like a dumb question. Is there a special place that is more pleasurable for a dog, for a human to pet or handle? You know, everybody reaches for the head behind the ears.
Yeah, dogs, for the most part, love just to be touched, to be petted. I would never come up to a dog from behind if he didn't know I was there and, you know, grab him around the head or anything like that. But I always, a strange dog, I always walk up and let him kind of give me a quick sniff before I put my hand out. But otherwise, they love to be scratched or petted any place.
It's 10 minutes before it's 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio, the 1, 95.1 FM. And 1080 AM for over 50 years. David, when we come back, I want to talk about fishing.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
This is Julie Pritchard, Chair of the Northfield School Board. We have listened intently to our community to understand your priorities for moving the school district forward. You have told us to focus our efforts on the elementary and early childhood facility needs, school security, and to minimize the impact to you, the taxpayers. The Northfield School District bond referendum is in response to what we heard. With a crowded November ballot, please take time to become informed about this important local issue. Information about the bond can be found on the Northfield School District's website. Be sure to vote on November 6th. Thank you for your support.
Prepared and paid for by Northfield Public Schools.
Millstream Commons Assisted Living is where the all-star seniors enjoy life in Northfield. From the delicious meals, the bright, spacious apartments, the volunteer projects, the bus trips we take, classes we attend, and the music we enjoy, there's something for everyone. At Millstream Commons, we treat everyone like an MVP. For more information, call 507-650-0141.
We're back on the Wayne Eddy Affair on this Friday morning. Good morning, everybody. Almost noon. It is 8 minutes before 11 o'clock, and our guest this morning is Dave Bisladal, and he and his partner will be on here tomorrow morning with a story about pheasant hunting.
Yeah, Northfield Outdoors tomorrow, which will be on at 11 o'clock. Hay Scriven and myself had a chance to go out to the governor's pheasant opener and out in Laverne, Minnesota. And
near the South Dakota border.
Yeah, getting out there. Yeah. It's a smaller town, about 4,000 people, but you got to listen to the show because the people really came out and promoted the town did a lot of stuff.
Was it more fun than the fishing opener?
For me, yes, because I love to sit and talk hunting all the time. And it's not quite as big, so people are a little more accessible. For example, we got to interview the lieutenant governor, sat down with her, talked with her, got to talk with Amy Klobuchar, kind of off the record on there. We interviewed the DNR commissioner and a few other people, so they were pretty open. We talked a lot about hunting and the hunting future around here.
Well, I mentioned we're going to talk fishing. Take a look at that and then make a comment, if you will.
That is one big catfish.
Yes, it is.
I'm looking at a picture of Wayne. And of course, Wayne's got this big grin on his face, but that fish is almost as big as you are.
Yeah.
Is that over... No, don't tell me. It's got to be on the river someplace.
Oh, yeah.
St. Croix or Mississippi?
St. Croix.
Oh, St. Croix River. It's, that's a beautiful fish.
Well, that's just one. No, I'm a catch and release guy.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to do is show you the... I caught two. I caught a flathead.
Okay.
And a channel.
Okay.
And they're both about the same size. This might be...
Those must have been fun to pull in, though.
Forever. Well, yeah. You know what we did is... I get to talk about me. How about that?
Folks, I'm sure you're shocked about that out there.
Are you a Polaris guy?
Yes. I mean, I have a Polaris four-wheeler, and okay. That's what I use.
Well, a friend of mine was president of Polaris at one time.
Oh, what was his name?
Ken Larson.
Ken Larson, okay.
Yeah. And he'd come down with brand-new snowmobiles. Oh, God, we had fun. But anyhow, we went up to, and all we did is troll between Stillwater and Hudson. The time, constant. Yeah. Just, well, I had a lot of line out. And I was on the bottom.
The interesting thing, you'll never know what you're going to catch either.
That's why we went there.
Yeah.
I also caught a sauger, and I caught a nice-size walleye.
Oh, okay.
In a northern. So, you know, how about that? But
that's what makes it fun doing that is, okay, what do I have on the end here?
So when you got a fish as big as that thing was, and you're fishing the bottom, and, you know, you just watch your rod go down and stay down, and then you got a lot of line out.
Yeah.
I mean, I got tired. I mean, I really, and I always watch these shows where they catch sailfish, and they have the belt, and they have their pole, and I always thought, wouldn't that be fun? But I'm sitting there, and like a dummy, I attach my reel for left-hand reel in, the first one. I
switched it up.
Yeah, but still, it was just so much work. But then you bring it up, and you go, oh, my God. And then do you catch and release? Or no, you probably walleye. Eat a lot of walleye.
Yeah, but I still, you know, if it's not something that I'd really, I'll catch enough walleye to get a meal, and I'll let that go. Otherwise, bass fishing or anything like that, it's a catch and release. And, of course, when I go out western part of the country out to Montana or trout fishing, we pretty much always.
So you do fly fishing?
Well, not according to my son.
No, okay.
he gives me such a bad time. He tells me, Dad, just stick with your spin caster. You're hopeless.
I don't know if you have new Jeff Dahl.
Yes.
Okay. Jeff is one hell of a fisher person. And we went fly fishing on them. Well, we did use a John boat, and we float fish all the way from Camp Ripley down to, can't remember the name of the town. And then we camped overnight on a sandbar. It was so much fun. And I said, Jeff, how come you don't do the swish, swish, swish? And he says, a waste time. Do it right the first time. And he's right when you think about it.
Yeah, there's.
I guess it's fun to do the.
Yeah, and there's a lot of different. I've talked to my son about that, and he said, well, there's multiple ways to cast. You know, you got to take a look at your environment, where you're trying to get to, what are your obstacles, what are you trying to do. Yeah. You know, I'll go out to the river with him. Of course, I'll throw something in the water right away. I see him spending 10, 15 minutes, you know, studying the river bottom, you know, turning a rock over, seeing what's the hatches and stuff. And you know what? He's always the first one that catches a fish, even though I've been in the water, you know, 15 minutes before him.
Yeah, I had a smallie come out of the water. I think it was 5 feet, but it's probably 2 feet, and grabbed my fly. in midair, and then took off for his crib.
That is fun.
Yeah,
that is fun.
Hole, and it took a long time to get that smallie in.
Yep,
it really did. So you prefer if they you know the old saying about if you had to make a decision, you can either fish or you can hunt. You'd go hunting.
I'd go hunting.
And then now between that. Would you, if you were told you can do one or just one, would it be geese? Would it be ducks? Would it be bear? Would it be deer? Would it be turkeys?
Oh boy, that's
or squirrels or rabbits.
That's a tough one. I absolutely love deer hunting, and deer hunting's coming up real shortly. Well, in fact, bow hunting is going on right now. You know. Late in the fall, I absolutely love deer hunting, but then in the spring, I sure love the turkey hunting. But early in the fall, I can't wait to get out there to do a little duck hunting, pheasant hunting. So that's a tough question for me.
Now, are you fortunate enough to have a deer stand on a piece of property that you use regularly?
Yeah, right where I live.
Oh.
I have 10 acres. Well, I live inside the state park.
That's right.
And I'm allowed, although the state park, there's no hunting, I'm allowed to hunt on my acreage. And so I have a permanent deer stand right in
there. Is that where you normally go then?
Yep.
So yes, you can walk in the house and go to the bathroom, get a cup of hot chocolate, and go back out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, that's paradise.
Yeah, it's kind of fun because I'll put out my game cameras. I start putting those out in September, early October, just to kind of take a look at what's walking around out there. So I have an idea of what are available for bucks out there. So I know I can wait a certain time because, okay, I'm not going to take the first buck that I see. Stuff.
Well, I've got one final question.
Sure.
And that is, you see people that save antlers, and then you read stories about, hear people talk about a six-point buck or whatever. What is the big deal about that, and what is considered really a big deal, and what's normal?
Well, to be part of what you would call the Minnesota record book, where they'll actually keep records, you have to have on white-tailed deer, you have to have a score of 150 points. And what that is, it's measurements of the antlers. And there's typical and non-typical. In fact, we could do a whole show just on this, but your typical deer, they measure around the antlers, the length of each point, and then they subtract if they're uneven to get to that 150 points or above.
Well, I always thought a point was on the antlers, and you counted every little stub that's
sticking out. Actually talking, when I say points, I'm not talking actual, like a 5-point or a 6-point. It's a point system where, okay, where it's a measurement.
But tell me in my knowledge, do you count the points that are on a rack?
Well, if someone will ask me, hey, how big a deer did you get? What was your rack? Oh, I got an 8-point deer. I got a 10-point deer.
And that would be the little point things.
Yeah, on that. But if you're talking to, you know, deer hunters that really want to know what was the size of their rack, well, it measured 130 points, 135 points.
Okay, we're going to turn things over to the station again. But before we go, I thought of another question, and sure, that is this. Are you ready?
Fire away.
Could you kill a moose?
Yes. I'm one of the fortunate people that have actually, I got drawn in a lottery and got a Minnesota moose back in the late 80s.
Really?
Yep.
Don't you feel bad?
Well, back then the moose were on the rise. It was a great animal to hunt. Now the moose in this state are in such danger. No, there isn't a season per se, and I wouldn't. But back then, they were all as plentiful. You know, starting to get as plentiful as what they're doing with deer. But it was you had to be extremely lucky to get drawn. It was a once-in-a-lifetime lottery, and I did.
Did you get one?
Yes, up by Roseau.
Okay. Were they easier to get because they seem so big? And, I haven't seen one run. Well,
Let's say it was a really interesting, fun hunt. It was a hard hunt.
Well, maybe we'll get together sometime.
Oh, yeah, I've got a whole story on that. And it's sad of what's happened to the moose in this state.
I remember.
There's a lot of reasons the moose are... in 30 years, we may not have moose in this state.
I remember at a fishing opener up way up north, and we were in the boat, and all of a sudden, choop, the engine is down to idle, and look over there on the shore, and there was a moose in the water eating whatever they eat there, and we just idled as close as we could, and man, are they massive!
Oh,
holy cow!
That was the job, getting that out of where we got it. So,
okay, are they good to eat?
Yes, actually, not gamey at all.
Wow,
I enjoyed it.
3 minutes after 11 o'clock, extra time for my extra good friend. Thank you, David.
Yeah, I'd love to come back in. We'll talk a little moose hunting or whatever hunting you want.
11 o'clock tomorrow morning, all about the opening pheasant.
Yeah, the Minnesota Governor's Pheasant Opener with Andy Beham, Hayes Scriven, and myself.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, Wayne.
95.1, the one.
Oh, that was fun.
Still a friend you can count on.
KYMN, Northfield, Minnesota.